Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
The FIA World Endurance Championship on RS1.
On RS1.
Part of the Radio Show Limited Network.
So, Sir Adam will be joining me in a moment or two here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. This morning, we had the first of the FP sessions, free practice sessions, and it was the Glickenhaus car that was on top, the 708. And that is the Glickenhaus 007 LMH. It was Romain Dumas, the Frenchman and Pikes Peak champion, who, among other things, in fairness, who did pretty much all of the driving, I think, this morning. Yes, he did. And he put the car at the top of the times. He shares with Ryan Briscoe from here in the US and his countryman, Olivier Pla. The interest was that the two Toyota Gazoo racing cars were split. It was Alpine in second, by the way. The best of the LMP2s split the two Toyota Gazoo Racing GRO10, and that was the real team by WRT. I've just realised that I've said Ryan Briscoe USA. That's where his license is from. Ryan Briscoe is Australian. Thank you, Tim. You're absolutely right. That'll teach me to take what's written on entry lists as gospel. But the point I was making was that we had Norman Nartaud, another Frenchman, this morning in real team by WRT, the Swiss flag team, but very much run by the Belgian W Racing team. The 41 car was the best of the LMP2s. In GT Pro, it was 92 Porsche from 91, the two Porsche GT Works cars. And in GTE Am, it was the Project 1 car from memory. For some reason, the morning session results aren't on the website, so apologies if I've got that one wrong. Lots to talk about from the early early sessions on Saturday and Sunday, including one or two incidents and accidents. Toyota had a little bit of a bang and had to replace a couple of side pods and half the floors. There was a Porsche that went very hard into the wall. Brendan Arrib, Ollie Milroy and Ben Barnicot in that car. And that number 56 Team Project 1 car actually replaced by a car that isn't racing this weekend. But, of course, now it is, if you see what I mean. But the GR Racing number 86, Mike Wainwright, the bronze driver there, who is effectively the man behind that GR Racing team from the UK, decided with the situation in the international geopolitical situation and the war between Russia and the Ukraine, he decided it probably wasn't something that he wanted to do, and there were other things that needed his attention. No criticism from anybody on that. And Mike's car was already here, so when the problem arose for the 56 team, the team project car, the car already been packed up. Not sure if it's totally gone. The team saying quite pointedly the car was damaged beyond being able to be repaired here at the circuit. So they are going to take the car back to Project 1 and see what they can do with it and what Porsche can do with it. But for the moment, they are using the car that would have been the 86, the chassis that would have been the GR Racing car. Also of note, team name change for the René Binder, what was the 26 car, that is now changed back to the 45 and is the Algar Pro Racing team in blue and black. And a change of category as well. They've gone into Pro-Am. René Binder, very sensible and very open about the situation there. Not something, as I said at the time, that we want to delve into. I think pretty much everybody knows the situation with the former sponsor there. been a tough time for the team. They've come through the other side of it, and very dignified way of going on. That recognised by the other teams in LMP2. The other 14 teams voting unanimously to allow Algar Pro Racing to score points in the championship, to be allowed to score points in the championship despite the name change. Underway on time, as you might expect. And the engine notes beginning to rise. Now, if you're out at turn 16, you will see that the pit close light is actually on at the moment. But the pits are not closed. That is just as a reference to the drivers so that they can acquaint themselves with where that pit entry light is. Very important that they know that. So 36 cars, and I think we saw all of them this morning. Waiting for them to get up to speed, but glorious sounds round Sebring International Raceway. Live on RS1, it is the FIA WEC first round of the 2022 season. Season 10 of the World Championship with our season sponsor Valkyrie AI. Also announced this week as a new supporter and much more than just a sticker on the United Autosport cars. Richard Dean explaining to us earlier on today, as that was announced exclusively on Midweek Motorsport, that it's all about finding those incremental gains. Listen out for our Valkyrie data sets with Shea Adam in the weeks following FIA World Endurance Championship events. Shea was talking to the guys in Austin this lunchtime, in fact, and finding out what information is going to be available. They were asking her how she wanted it presented and what stats she wanted. And she'll be putting that together for post FIA WEC reports in Midweek Motorsport throughout the season. And happy to announce that once again, the only dedicated free radio coverage of the FIA WEC, including test day at Le Mans and every session at Le Mans, is here on RS1. So cars getting back up to speed. The crackle of the upshifts, like a rifle shot. Oh, big moment for Toyota number 7 in the hands of Jose Maria Lopez, just going through tower turn, lost the car in the middle of the corner and ended up just dropping off the end of the now extended curb to driver's left there, and the Michelin's throwing up a little bit of dirt. But he's carried on regardless. He's on the Ullman straight at the moment, going past the back of the pits. He is the quickest driver at the moment, speeding in the pit lane for the ARC Bratislava Pro-Am LMP2. This is the number 44 car, Miroslav Konopka. Miro a little bit anxious on the pit lane speed button. Doesn't seem to have slowed Jose Maria Lopez down at all. He has put in exactly the same lap as his fastest lap with that little whoopsie at tower. And we have 34 cars out on the circuit, make that 35, as Roman Dumas has been out and straight back into the pit lane in the Glickenhaus number 708, the red and white car. To the top, Andre Negrau for Alpine Elf team in that grandfathered number 36 with the Gibson engine last year for that car. No further allowance for that former LMP1 car allowed into the hybrid category, or the, sorry, hypercar category, HC. So Andre Negrau did the bulk of the driving this morning as well with a 152.7 against a 53.8. But Jose Maria Lopez going very quickly again in the number 7. Toyota Gazoo Racing GR010. Some detailed changes on that car. He's on the back straight now. Got the couple of cars in front of him. They'll, I think, might just catch them coming into turn 17 at Sunset. One of them being the number 41 LMP2 of Ferdinand Habsburg, who's just out of the pits, coming through on the front straight now. The GTE AM car in there as well, which I think might have been the 98 of Paul Dallolana. Yes, it was. Got past Paul going into turn one. Did he improve? He did not. But Brendan Hartley did and goes to the top. 151.0. No, Jose Maria Lopez did improve, excuse me. And Andre Negrau goes back to the top now. All of a sudden, we've got a qualifying session breaking out here. 150.8 now. Time's tumbling. Nearly 0.2 of a second between Andre Negrau and the two Toyota Gazoo racing cars. 38.8 and 7. The blue Alpine Elf machine from the two red, white and black Toyotas. Top of the pops for LMP2, Philippe Albuquerque for the number 22. And that's the United Autosports car, of course. Then it's René Rast for WRT, the 31. Dan Cameron getting a run for Team Penske. And that's third for Penske at the moment. That's impressive. Really good to have a chat with Dan Cameron on Sunday last. You can hear that interview in part two of our prologue, which is available free from the archive at radio-show.co.uk. He was talking about how there's so much to learn this year for the whole team in the WEC. But that said, Shea Adam, still looking for results and still expecting results because that's how Penske roll.
Well, yes, and we've said it many times before about their IMSA program. Penske do not do learning years. There's no excuse for not winning races and or championships when you are a Penske driver. It doesn't matter if the program's existed for 5 months, 5 years, 5 decades. It's null and void. Penske wants you to go out there and win. This program is very interesting. And, John, I have to say, I did a bit of wandering around in between these sessions. I went up and down the pit lane to get a feel for what these boxes look like, what the tents look like. Penske's tent on the pit lane for the WEC, very reminiscent of Penske's tent that they have set up for the IMS WeatherTech Sports Car Championship that they've had for the last couple of years. The only difference is the tire ovens behind the tent.
Yeah. And Dan mentioned that they need to get to used to those cars, those tires rather, coming out the ovens warm and getting on it immediately.
Well, and the only advantage that I can think of is Dan Cameron is used to driving and basically an LMP2, which is the DPI platform. It's a specialized version, though. It's very highly modified. So for him, jumping into an Orica LMP2, that is different. For Felipe Nasr, jumping into an LMP2 Orica, that is different. He's been racing the Cadillac DPI in years past, and now he's also racing in a Porsche. For Emmanuel Collard, jumping into a LMP2 Orica, different experience. So for all of the drivers within the Penske organization, at least they're not having to reacquaint themselves with a different version of an LMP2 car. It's a brand new experience for all of them to learn. That car still out on track. Dane Cameron behind the wheel, has come into the pit lane, sitting fifth in the LMP2 category. It is Ferdinand Habsburg, quickest so far, real time by WRT. United Autosport, Felipe Albuquerque, second. And then WRT with René Rast, third. We've got Andre Negrau is the quickest time overall still. That's held on for a good 10 minutes, John.
Amazing. Yeah, very, very impressive. There was a little bit of trading of times earlier on. Almost looked like a qualifying session. Let's take our first Sacred Coffee pit lane reports. Sacred Coffee, Tubbs and the rest of the team fueling our pit lane reports in the WEC this weekend. Hashtag Coffee of Motorsport. Welcome to our WEC coverage. Joe Bradley, enjoying yourself in the heat, and it is pretty warm out there, 30 degrees Celsius.
Oh, it's really, really hot, but I'm not sure that the crews are enjoying it. We all have to wear fire suits, of course, in the pits, but the weather conditions are consistent at least, and the session has already gotten underway in earnest. I'm just at the number 34, the Inter-Europol car, and already we're seeing setup changes on the cars. Tweaks going on with regards to ride height and damper changes. So this morning's session was truncated slightly by the onset of rain about halfway through it. So, you know, they had the prologue earlier in the week, but now with the temperature rising as it is, it's going to be very, very valuable data that they're going to be acquiring in this session moving on to the race on Friday. So, yeah, every ounce of track time is very, very valuable in these teams from now on.
Just going to grab a few interviews where we can and get some atmosphere from down in the pits.
And it's actually kind of funny, Joe, talking about the temperature out there being so warm. We ran into Nick Tandy. We were actually just walking out to the pit lane now. And Nick said, "How you going?" He said, "All right." And he goes, "Yeah, me too. It's actually nicer in the car. Got AC in there, breathing in cold air." And Joe goes, "Ah, right, go get in the car." And Nick goes, "Yeah, it does get a bit warmer after you start working, but when you're just sitting there, it's rather lovely." So the driver of the Corvette, number 64, Nick Tandy, and Tommy Milner sharing that car. It looked like Tommy Milner was in it for the majority of the session this morning. Nick expected to drive the majority of this afternoon session. And every single team is praying that this session stays dry, because, John, you were here for the prologue, I wasn't, but apparently they didn't get an entire session that was not rain-affected, and the same is true for this morning's FP1.
There was a shower on Sunday afternoon as well. Yeah,
there you go.
Absolutely. So, I keep looking at the wrong... We've got a split timing screen here, because there's two completely different sets of timing and scoring, of course. I keep looking at the one that's closest to me, and the dancing ants there is the IMSA system. So I can see all the cars going round, but they're all the Joker.
Yes.
They've all got question marks on them. So I've got to look to my right, to your side, to see.
It's what happens when you play Super Mario, and you come upon the little box, and it's got a question mark in it, and you have to jump to find out what reward you're going to get. Well, on your screen, John, there are 36 little rewards waiting to be discovered, whereas on the WEC one from Alcabell, that actually tells you who is where. Very useful. Was there a penalty for Mr. Crissoni for blowing the checkered flag twice? Just have to ask, because we were thinking about that. We were watching.
I expect that will have been a financial penalty. And those details at RSL_studio, by the way, if you would like to get in touch with us here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. If you give me a second, I might even be able to answer that question.
Alrighty.
Can't there.
Well, for fans around the circuit, there are three bright yellow cars out on the track, and two of the three of them are running around together. The Corvette is just ahead of that Iron Lynx Ferrari that I was just mentioning that Matteo Crissoni is one of the pilots of. I don't think it's him in the car right now. No, it's not. It is Giancarlo Fisichella, who is currently chasing Nick Tandy. The third bright yellow car, completely yellow, I should say, is that of the 44. That's the ARC Bratislava team. We've also got yellow on other cars, including the 88 Dempsey Proton Porsche. That one is yellow and blue. And the Penske Mobile is like a Penske Mobile.
Decision number one, Matteo Crissoni. Took the checkered flag twice, contrary to 9.1.13 of the WEC sporting regulations. Fine of €500.
Ooh.
€500. So there you go. It was just a question of me getting to the right computer.
So how much do you want to do a lap around Sebring? It's only 500 euros.
It's fine. Yeah, but, you know, not at speed. That'd be a lot of laps of the Nürburgring. I feel that might be slightly, all right, tourist laps, but I feel you get better value, in fairness, from that.
I don't know. Is there a better track than Sebring International Raceway?
It's bumpy, I'll give you that.
So I've heard.
Yeah.
That seems to be the positive reassurance from everybody out there. Only one car has yet to actually set a lap time in this session, and that is the Glickenhaus. Romain Dumas took it out, completed sectors 1 and 2, and then pitted at the end of that first lap. So yet to see a time from the red and white machine. Paul Dalla-Lana is aboard the Northwest AMR Aston Martin, car number 98. He's happy to be back here. Saw him in the in-between time. He's keeping nice and chill by trying to stay in the air conditioning, and can't blame him. The weather today is quite warm, particularly for early March. It is spring break. People come to Florida for their spring break, and this kind of weather is ideal if you're on a beach, not so much if you're driving a race car. Andre Negrau is still going round and round, and his last lap through, actually purple sector 2, personal best sector 3. I wonder if he's setting up to try and do a fast one. His time wasn't that good. He was still 2/10 off the best time that he has done himself. But let's see, as he comes to the end of sector 1 now, and does not do a particularly flying lap.
A less than flying lap. Stuttering lap.
A slightly gliding lap.
Gliding lap. Yeah. I like it. Very good. See what you did there.
Yeah. So just to fan out for a moment here, we've got Roy Andrade, who's the fastest in the fastest car so far in this session in LMP2. Then we've got Felipe Albuquerque, Antonio Felix da Costa, Louis Delatraz, René Rast, Alessio Rivero, Dane Cameron. How about that for a list of characters that you would want to put in your prototype? I know there's a lot of fantasy leagues going on right now for all the various racing seasons kicking up. Those would be some good guys to have on your roster.
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
That 92 Porsche is still glued to the top of the GTE Pro as well. Michael Christensen being shown as having done the time.
Porsches were 1 and 2 this morning.
And it was the 92 who was fastest. But the 92 is the car, John, that was less lucky in the race last time out. I think they finished 5th in 2019 as a duo. Their sister car went on to win, though. Richie Leitz and Jimmy Bruni. They are it's actually the same duos for both of the Porsche teams. That's pretty cool. They brought the same bullets in their guns for this weekend.
I still can't get used to Jimmy Bruni in Porsche colours. I nearly, in the introduction when I was sitting next to him on the golf cart on Sunday, I still nearly called him by as a driver from his previous.
From a different manufacturer.
Yeah. 35.8 on the track has gone up, but the air temperature has gone down.
It is cloudy.
Yeah, 28.3. Let's go down to WRT. This is Real Team by WRT and a bit of racing royalty. I have to say, welcome to Sebring, to Ferdinand Habsburg-Lothringen, who is with our Joe Bradley. Now, you decide which one of those is the racing royalty.
Well, Ferdy, I can tell you've been working hard and you've just been in the car because you're a bit hotter than everyone else, and that's quite something here. What's your thoughts, having just been on the track?
I'm generally somebody who puts on a good sweat. Maybe it's because I put more effort in, but I don't think so. I think it's just me. And I just did a quali simulation, so that's why you put a bit more heart and soul into it, and then you tire up. No, you don't tire up, but you just feel your body is heating up a little bit more. But apart from that, it's my normal. It's how my body cools down, and it also the humidity here is quite intense for me, so I need to keep hydrated.
Do you think, Ferdy, that driver fitness is going to be coming to play? I mean, it's going to be forecast of 31 degrees on Friday. That's really, really hot for you guys in the car.
Yeah, it's going to be hot. But Bahrain was really hot as well. So I don't expect it to be much more difficult than that. I mean, it's a bit more humid. But I think we're all a bit, you know, quite really excited for the first race to come up. And in excitement, you forget all your senses of, like, heat and all of that stuff, so you're more worried about where you can pee next, because normally you have to pee when you're excited. So I think it will be totally fine. I hope we will have a good race that will make dealing with the heat a lot easier, rather than around the back. But at the moment, we're P1, so I think it's all looking okay.
That's pretty good. Can't do much better at this point. Thanks, Ferdy. Great to talk to you as ever.
Ferdinand Habsburg with Joe Bradley down in the pit lane. You'll have noticed it's gone a wee bit quiet. This is a full course yellow. This was a planned full course yellow share. We don't think anybody's gone off here. This is just testing the systems.
Gave us a minute and 10 seconds warning, so okay. That tells me it's a test. Although one car in particular is going very, very slowly. I think that's the Algarve Pro entry LMP2. Blue and black at the back of the
45
fin.
45 car. Change of number, change of livery, change of name for that entry.
It's down by 11 now, and it is going very slowly.
Yeah, even slower than the cars at full course yellow place. So I wonder if that one has been off the track. And we'll try and get a look at the right-hand side of that car as it comes through the Jean de Bian bends. Difficult to see. Even if it's just dusty, we'll get an idea. A couple of German flags on the RVs parked up. Already very busy. It's going to be an absolute belter of a crowd this weekend. Hardly an RV space anyway. It's just quite windy, by the way, as well.
Very.
The wind blowing pretty much across the start finish and therefore the back straight as well. Now, that slow moving car, is a problem.
Maybe overtaken on the race control, letting competitors know that if they come upon the 45, they can go around it.
And the teams, you might think, well, how's the driver who's coming up amongst that going to know that? Well, obviously the teams are seeing the same messages. There is a messaging system up to the pit wall from race control, and they will be telling their drivers, the very aggressive looking 708 just going through tower turn now, turn 11, and heading down to the Jean de Bian bends. I expect that this full course yellow will continue until we get that Algarve Pro Racing LMP2 into the pit lane. It is Stephen Thomas who's behind the wheel.
He's had a day
of that car.
Went off a couple of times at turn 7. I do see a car entering the pit lane. That's him. He's made it back around. So
it's the turn 16, of course. I was thinking he's got all the way down the back straight, but we have got the secondary pit lane being used for Friday's race.
Hello, Jamie Price, on his scooter out around the circuit.
Put a helmet on. You know it makes sense.
He normally does have that bright blue helmet
does.
On.
He does. So we'll wait to see race control pull the full course yellow.
Just saw a shot of the 21 Ferrari. That's the AF course machine that did not go out in the practice earlier. I had a quick word with Tony Volander, and he said, why risk? Which I understand. It was raining quite heavily at certain points during that session, but now that car is out. We've got Simon Mann behind the wheel, the young American driver, son of Peter Ashley Mann. Very, very well-known Ferrari-ista, it's fair to say. Mm-hmm. They ran very well at the 24 Hours of Daytona, too, coming in fifth place after a late penalty dropped them down quite a bit. But it's interesting that Simon and Tony are doing double duty this weekend because they're also in the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring, sharing that car, the 21A, of course, with Luis Perez Compact.
You worked it out, and you've got a handy little aide memoir here. 20 drivers now doing basically 20 hours. Obviously, not all of them all doing all of the hours of the race, but being on duty for 20 hours on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
That is tough. I don't care how fit you are. Round here, that's very tough indeed. Let's say there's three of you doing the eight-hour race, and you're roughly split it up between. That's probably, let's say it's two and a half hours apiece.
2.5 each, yeah. Yeah, yep, right. Fair enough.
Then you've got the 12 hours. So, again, there's three of you, and
four
that's
hours
easy.
Each.
That's 4 hours each. So you're talking about six and a half hours in 2 days and no recovery time between Friday and Saturday. But one of the drivers said to me, I think it was Philippe Albuquerque, he said, John, just think of it. It's a 20-hour race with 8 hours off overnight.
Yeah, but would you want to be involved in a 20-hour race at Sebring? We had the 24-hour, the Creventic series, and people were brave in that.
All I'm thinking is everybody's going to go to bed at after they finished at 8 o'clock on Friday night, local time here. You know, debrief, food, bit of a massage. They're going to go to bed and think, yeah, great, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. It's when they get up on Saturday morning and go, oh, that bruise there's come up nicely.
Yep.
From all the left-hand corners. You know, all the right-hand corners, you've got your bruises on your left side. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable. Let's ask a question of a driver who's doing double duty, because Joe Bradley is with Kamui Kobayashi, whose job in the WEC is for the number 7 Toyota. In the 12 hours of Sebring, he'll be in the 48 Ally Cadillac. Joe Bradley, how's he gonna take that? How's the body gonna take that battering? That's what we want to know.
I'm gonna ask him right now. He's looking very cool because you've got no racing overalls on, I see, Kamui. So you're not working at Toyota this afternoon. What's your job this afternoon? Then just observe.
No, just I have no problem because it's only 1 hour session. It's quite short to run 3 drivers. That's why I just avoiding driving.
I talk about the heat and the conditions of Sebring, but here you are doing double duties. You're doing the World Endurance Championship, and then the following day you're doing the 12 hours of Sebring in cars that are very, very different. What are the challenges that that's going to present?
Well, I think it's possible that the heat right now, it's nothing compared when you're dry racing in the Middle East. So here it's fine for us. Yeah. I think double duty the race. I'm pretty happy. I mean, we're doing 20-hour races. So just if you do 8-hour, 12-hour races, how many hours? 20 hours. So it's not much, to be honest.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. But the cars are different, are they? What's the differences in the cars that you're going to be driving this weekend?
Well, it's quite a big difference, obviously. But we know the car both, so, you know, I don't mind to have a little tiny practice session to dive to the DPI class. Yeah. Still, you know, the race is a longer way to go. It's 12 hours, so... You know, the first thing should be like practice for me. And then just we'll see later how it goes.
And I'm told you also have managerial duties with Toyota this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, just... this is my first race actually. But, so obviously we'll see how it goes. But so far, I'm a little bit busy myself. But I enjoy the moment.
That's a bit different, because as a racing driver, you can be very selfish. You've got one thing to think about. But as a manager, you've got to think about everything. Is that what you're finding?
Well, I think at the end of the day, I think to success the result. So I think at the end of the day, a little extra work, but I think it doesn't matter for me.
Great stuff. Great to see you. Kamui Kobayashi, as you said, John, doing double stints in both the World Endurance Championship and the 12 Hours of Sebring. And for me, I'm finding... It's just mind-blowing, isn't it? As these drivers who can transition from one very different Toyota hybrid prototype into the other car that he's going to be driving in the 12 hours. The Ally Cadillac. Similar in looks, kind of thing, but that is all two very, very different cars to drive. It's just that's why they're professional racing drivers, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Andy's putting his team manager's hat on as well, as we were mentioning there. Just a note that the Toyota has had a change in its balance of performance with the deployment on the front axle of the hybrid power being moved up quite 30 kilometres per hour. And in fact, talking to Kamui and to Brendan Hartley last weekend, they were saying it actually now isn't deploying in any corners, so they're not getting the additional grip at the exit of the corners. If they're on a real flyer, it just about kicks in on the exit of turn one, but that's it. So they're having to use the hybrid deployment in different ways and deploy it on the straight instead, which obviously still gives them the opportunity to save fuel, but that's different. It's not giving them the punch out the corner that it used to. It's up to well over 70 miles 80 miles an hour now, I think.
Well, you talk about some superstars that Toyota brings over. Kamui Kobayashi, it's crazy to think that this is only going to be the third time that he's raced at Sebring, because the last time he ran here was last year with the Ally Cadillac. The time before that was with Toyota in 2019, finished second in that race. He's got some experience around this track, but in terms of Kamui, he's way more experienced at places like Daytona, as far as North America is concerned. Even, I would venture a guess, Circuit of the Americas. He's probably got a lot of laps around there, too, since the WEC used to run there a couple of times before they ultimately moved the endurance race to North America back to Sebring.
So the Toyota is 30 kilos heavier than they were for the final round at Bahrain last year. That's 1070 kilos against 1030 for the Glick and 952 for the grandfathered A480 Gibson Alpine. The Toyota's has been set at 500 kilowatts, so that's 19 horsepower lower than what they had. Glickenhaus are using the full 520, the Alpine 430 kilowatts. What I can't find out is where the power... Oh, yeah, 190 kilometres from the lowest of 120 kilometres an hour. So it's much more than I thought it was. So that's a huge difference for that car. And speaking of Glickenhaus, the man with his name above the door is Jim Glickenhaus. And he's with Joe Bradley down in the pit lane for this powered... Let's call it fueled by Sacred Coffee Pit and Paddock Report, Joe.
Jim, we've just been chatting about the balance of performance in the top hypercar class. What's your take on it? Are we going to see a more competitive run for the Glickenhaus this weekend?
Oh, we're absolutely going to see a more competitive Glickenhaus, certainly by Le Mans. I think the FIA and the WEC are making a very strong effort to give us a fair BOP. I think you see the first signs of it beginning to emerge. I think they may do a lot of work between now and Le Mans. But we feel very confident, and we see no problem at all with the speed of the P2s. We're happy they're running. You know, they've been dinged so much. They're doing a great job with what they have. And we don't think it's an issue at all, because once the stint lengths happen, they're going to be pitting a lot more than the hypercars, so we don't see that as a problem. We do see that we need to have a fair balance of performance with Toyota, and it remains to be seen. I think at the end of Sebring, we'll know exactly how fast they're able to run with this BOP, and you know, hopefully by Spa, it'll get a little closer, and I think by Le Mans, we'll have a real chance to win.
It's very tricky. I mean, I think it's probably easier to balance performance of two race cars over one lap, Jim. But over a 12-hour or 24-hour motor race, it becomes very, very complex. Can you put your finger on exactly what you would like to see, given to your car, let's say?
Well, we're very happy with the direction it's going. We thought that the activation speed that Toyota was allowed was unfair because it enabled them to drive in four-wheel drive and to pull out of the turns. We felt that it gave them an advantage on not hard rain, but a damp track, where we were on slicks, but we only had two-wheel drive, where they had four-wheel drive on cut slicks. So that we wanted to address. You know, it's a very difficult thing, to be honest with you. The cars are quite different. A hybrid car is totally different than our old school sports car, which is what we are. We're a GT1, but I think it can be done. I think more importantly, the WEC wants to do it. I think the ACO wants to do it. You know,
we want to see a competitive race, Jim.
No, exactly. I mean, you know, we have 120 million people who followed us on social media last year. This year, we're going to have 200 million people plus following us on social media. These people want to see a fair race. We're big boys. If we have a problem, if we have an off, no problem. You know, we'll sit and enjoy the rest of the race. But we don't want to see what happened in Le Mans last year. That was ridiculous. You know, Toyota had a lot of trouble, and they still beat everyone. And that's not fair. That's all we're asking for, is it to be fair. I think the fans want it. And especially, you know, next year when you have Ferrari coming in and Peugeot coming in with hypercars, I think it's very important that the fans believe that it's not rigged, that it's not preordained, that Toyota just keeps winning Le Mans, that everybody has an equal chance. And I think next year is going to be very interesting should the LMDHs actually show up, which it will be an interesting thing to see if they do, and how we balance those. But we feel very strong. We've gotten very good response from other teams. We're speaking to a number of teams about buying a car from us. I think we priced it very fairly at 2.5 million euros and 2 million for spares. You don't have to buy any racing services from us. If you want, we'll provide them. And I hope we have a third car. And we also have sold over 300 examples of our road-going version of our, so our car can now be a GT3 or Nürburgring car. And we look forward in 2024 to coming with hypercars and GT3s in WEC. And we're really excited.
We are excited too, Jim. Thanks for talking to us. I'm going to speak to you tomorrow, Jim. I'm saving the story of the lucky watch for tomorrow.
You got it.
So I'm going to grab you and find out all about that. And I've got lots more questions, but we'll talk to you. We've got a whole weekend to talk to you.
Absolutely. And it's a pleasure. We so thank you guys for what you do. And, you know, understanding that no one has the God-given right just to win Le Mans because it's them.
Well, we're happy that you're having a go at it, Jim, and you really are. And it's quite a courageous thing. Always thought that. Thanks for talking to us, Jim. Best of luck this weekend and for the rest of the season. Jim Glickenhouse.
Jim Glickenhouse with our Sacred Coffee Fueled Pit Report. Joe Bradley down there. Hashtag Coffee of Motorsport. If you haven't logged on, go and have a look. Worldwide delivery and some very, very nice limited edition single estate coffee beans. One called Andre Lotterer as well, which I can tell you, it's not the cheapest coffee, but my goodness me, is it worth it.
Kept
for special occasions.
Can I request that this weekend, if we are the Sacred Coffee Pit Lane team,
you are?
An IV drip of iced coffee?
Oh, iced coffee.
Just you know, put it on the back of my pack.
We need you to have a sort of Ninja Turtles backpack.
Done.
With iced Sacred Coffee.
Oh.
And then you could, you know, you could just...
I've got a Camelback, not with me, unfortunately, but yes, I would do that in a heartbeat. Sacred Coffee, it's worth it.
Tubbs and the guys put a lot of effort into supporting motorsport, been involved with Porsche for a very long time, and some Porsche drivers and ambassadors as well. We'll have a special offer as well through the season, through this weekend and the season. Go and look them up. They are enthusiasts, everyone.
We did have two relatively important things happening when Joe was chatting with Jim Glickenhouse there, and well worth hearing from him. The 45 Algarve Pro continues to struggle out on the track. Rene Binder having an off at turn 10 and did manage to rejoin the track, albeit a bit slower than we had expected him to go. He's still circulating around. That car 14th overall in the LMP2 class, the third quickest of the Pro-Am cars. And for the first time today, John Heindorf, I give you a non-Porsche fastest time in GTE AM. David Pittard has gone to the top in the 98 Northwest Aston Martin.
Still the two Porsches, first and second, 92 and 91 in Pro, exactly as they were this morning, and third Corvette Racing. And we are getting a little more consistency in the colours. It was a bit mixed up in GTE. Pro-Am. I didn't like that this morning. That offended me slightly. But we've still got three AM cars ahead of the two EF Corsa 51 and 52 Pro cars, being the Northwest AMR Aston, Dempsey Proton Racing number 77, and the 21 Simon Mann driven car as well.
Slightly awkward, don't you think?
Awkward.
Tony Vallander not registering that he is in a slower class, although he's in exactly the same specification of car, so he ripped out a very quick lap time at the beginning of this one.
Well, that's a good point, isn't it? They are. There's no difference now in the Pro-Am cars. I don't think there's any fuel differences in the WEC anymore. So
it's the same
speed-wise.
As GTD Pro and GTD. It's nice that everything's gone uniform like that.
I mean, a fantastic entry in GTE AM. And I've said this before, I said it on Midweek Motorsport. All this renting of garments and tearing of hair and running around trying to work out what the next GT class at Le Mans needs to be. The next GT class is GTE AM. It's already there. 20 odd cars, 23 cars. For Le Mans this year in that category, there are people who want to pay to go to Le Mans in those cars. If it does go to a full GT3 sort of spec, then, well, you've got to do it with SRO, because those are the people who've been the guardians of GT3. Then you've got to hope that a manufacturer doesn't build a special car for Le Mans and ruin it all, but they will. So why don't we just leave it where? Why are you asking people, same as LMP2, why are you asking people to buy a new car? Keep the current LMP2s, run them for an extra couple of seasons, see how the wind's blowing in the world. I like continuity. I really do. Who's been pulled to the naughty steps here? I see the purple on the bottom of the screen. That's never good.
Well, it's the 77 Dempsey Proton Racing Porsche. Either Christian Reed leaving the pits, or, hate to say it, Seb Priu brought the car in. So it's going to be one of those two. Given their positioning on the pit lane, they have a far greater opportunity to speed upon exiting. So I'm going to say, based on that, it was probably Christian, and he's been out there for a while.
Let's go back to Joe Bradley, just mentioning that Aston Martin going to the top of the times, the Northwest AMR. David Pittard did the time in that car. He's just out, and even before he's debriefing with his engineer, we'll debrief him, or at least Joe Bradley will.
Yeah, I'm going to be rude and jump in. Hello, David. You've been told you've gone to the top of the timing screens in your class, I take it.
No.
Well, you are. You're quickest.
Okay, that's always good to know.
Absolutely.
You can come more often if you have good news like that.
Yeah. I'm over the moon to be the one to tell you, yeah. What I want to know is that as fast as you can go, or have you got anything else left?
I mean, yeah, we're doing our race prep. We've seen what the weather can be like, and when the weather comes, it comes heavy and hard, and that washes a lot of the grip off of the track. So we have to be prepared for every scenario, so... We're in full race prep mode, so that any condition the Florida weather throws at us, we know what to do with the car and maximise the result on Friday.
Right, what do you mean by that, though? Tell our listeners, what exactly are you talking about? Being able to, very quickly change roll bar settings and the like?
That is possible, yes. Tyre pressure is obviously something that we can do as we're swapping tyres during the pit stops. Playing around with brake bias, traction control settings, anything that a driver has in its toolbox, as well as what we can communicate to the engineers to optimize the car for the track conditions. For the viewers out there that may not know, when the rain comes, a lot of the grip gets washed off of the circuit. And as a result, from before a rain shower to an after rain shower, you can drop seconds on a circuit as the rubber comes back down again. I mean, that time... it's probably a second and a bit slower than what we were doing at the pro, and obviously the weather we've had in the past few days is shows what.
I'm not gonna.
Well, just losing Joe there, right on the edges of the range of our equipment today. Still very much a set update today, so this is a bit of bonus coverage from our Sacred Coffee Fuel Pit reporter Joe Bradley. I think we got the gist of that. David was talking to me on Sunday. Was it Saturday? I can't remember now. In one of the two programmes that we did. And we were having a lovely chat, and we were just developing a bit of a conversation. Then all of a sudden, out of one of the containers that forms the pit lane there, swings open, one of the engineers pops out and just goes two fingers at him. In a nice way. You know, V for victory kind of way. And David said, looked back at him, and then he said, two laps or 2 minutes, and he went, no, 2 minutes. He said, oh, sorry, I've got to go. That happened to me three times when I was talking to people, all of a sudden, having said, well, I've got nothing to do this afternoon or this morning. They saw their driver talking to me and thought, well, better get him away from Hindhoff in case he finds out something.
Welcome to the life of a pit reporter. Yeah. Lining someone up for an interview and then just about to throw, and all of a sudden, nope, sorry, got to go get in the car. Joe, if you'd like to continue this string of interviewing drivers fresh out of getting out of the cars and telling them that they're fastest, well, Philippe Albuquerque is now somebody who falls into that category, because he just went fastest in the LMP2 class and is currently backing it up with another quick lap in that 22 machine.
And that means there's only two hypercars ahead of him, and he has just gone quickest again, 151.058, and that is very close. That's only 0.2 away from Toyota number 7 and Ryo Hirakawa and Mathieu Vaxivière's 36 Alpine Elf Racing Team with a 150.8. That's how tight it is at the top. Even having taken more power has more been taken power. Away. Well, less power, actually, for the LMP2s. Less aero for the LMP2s. They're not quick through the quick corners, but they must be quick or quick-ish down the straights because they are still nibbling at the heels of the top hypercars here at Sebring. I still think there's more to come from the LMP2s because all of the teams, it's Prologue, we're seeing it is so hard to get a balance of the car because of the bumps, you want the car to be quite compliant. So what you'd normally do is make it quite compliant but roll on a whole heap of downforce. We can't do that.
Nope.
So then they're trying to get the platform stable by stiffening the cars up, and of course the bumps have other ideas here. Really interesting conundrum for the race engineers and the suspension engineers here.
The other problem with the LMP2 cars is the tires that they are on do not like it when it gets really, really, really hot. So expectations are for today to be better than tomorrow, to be better than race day.
Right, yeah. And all of a sudden, and just like that, there's 15 minutes to go.
Oh, my goodness.
How did that happen?
We've got another driver called to the naughty step. This time, I think it's Christoph Ulrich in the number 21 AF Corse Ferrari. Again, speeding in the pit lane.
Up until a couple of 3 years ago, Christoph was listening to our coverage. And so he is one of the collective, and he's racing. So if you're looking for somebody to support this weekend, he's got a couple of decent co-drivers in the car shape.
Surely he should have a llama sticker on the car. Oh, double spin going into turn one. That's one of the Toyotas, number seven. Yes, there was. That was between car seven
and the 28 Jota.
28,
it's
yes.
The Jota, number 28. That's
so Mike Conway and...
Is it Ed Jones?
Jonathan Aberdeen.
Oh, it was Aberdeen, right? Okay.
Yep, both cars have rejoined and are continuing around the circuit. Sorry, just to wrap up that Ferrari thing, it's Tony Vallander and Simon Mann sharing the car with Christoph Ulrich.
Yeah,
very capable drivers.
So
there was contact.
Can't see any bits hanging off the Toyota. My goodness, that car looks flat. But they're big cars now, those hypercars, aren't they? They take up a lot of room on the road. Maybe just a little bit of misunderstanding about where the cars were and what they were doing and who was turning in first. You don't get time to go after you, Claude. No, after you, Sebastian. There's no time for that here. Mike Conway then continues. I don't see any damage on the Jota either, at least nothing hanging off.
They might have just hit each other side at the right angle.
Yeah.
Might have been flush.
The other thing is there is a big bump in the middle of turn one, which can kick you sideways. So going through there side by each sometimes is a little bit iffy. Same at turn 17 as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
Seen that plenty of times. But that was quite early on in the piece because they both ended up in the runoff area, effectively through the exit of the pit lane.
Yes. And the Jota actually wound up backwards just before the tires at the exit of the pit lane. So they did use up a lot of track, but it was almost as if maybe the Toyota had gone around the outside and just started to turn in, and maybe the LMP2 had moved back to the right to try and get in a better position to make turn one. But it looks like no harm, now foul.
And Shea did ask to keep the theme going of talking to drivers who've just put in the quickest time. I'm going to continue that theme of talking to the drivers who've put in the quickest time by speaking to Philippe Albuquerque. Philippe, the last time I looked, you were at the top of the screen. All going to plan, I take it.
Although the feeling was kind of bad in a way. Because
you mean? What do you mean?
I know.
You don't like being first. Is that what you mean?
I know. I hope that I keep doing this, right? Well, some people say that the comfortable car is not a quick car, right? So... I don't know. I think from the prologue, that's our feeling where we were. And now I think we're talking with my teammates as well. We are all struggling with understeer, so we just put new tires. Yes, I did improve half a second, but at the prologue, we were improving like a second and a half to 1 second. Right. So the front is not biting in a way.
So it's not a perfect car, but you're still top of the screen. That's what you mean, isn't it?
No, it's not. We need to
typical wait. Racing driver.
Exactly. We're never happy, right? But we need to wait for the other guys to put the new tires, because I would be surprised if they can go much faster.
Right.
But we need to stay calm and do our checklist, like how we can be happy about it. But at the moment, I'm not.
You're a typical race driver. You never change. Philippe, just tell us, we've seen the posters saying respect the bump. So for our listeners who are perhaps new to Sebring, what exactly does that mean?
Well, I think Sebring is iconic and unique in the whole world for the bumps that it has, the track. There was Q&As, like questions like, should we resurface it? And many drivers said, no way, because that's what makes this track so unique. So I really think that, especially last corner, we can talk about if there was a new asphalt there without the bumps, same grip. Just last corner alone, we could go like half a second faster. So because you need to change your driving style through all the track, braking here one way, brake the other one, another corner different way, just because the bumps are different. So you need to respect, and sometimes you feel that the car is ready to go on full throttle to exit of a corner, and then you have this big bump under the bridge in the last corner, which unsettles the car into a spin, into a crash, especially for the rookie guys. So the experienced ones, they go on throttle, wait for the bump, and then they put the rest. So that comes the respect, the bumps, because they will bite you.
And when you first come here, do you think, I can overcome that bump, I'm just going to squeeze the throttle in, and then you spin? Is that how you learn?
I didn't spin, but even now, after so many years, I came with an LMP2, which is different to the DPI car, and I had a huge moment, and I was looking to the pit entrance for IMSA, because the spin was coming, and then the hand of God put me back straight again, but pure luck, so it happens.
Great stuff, Felipe. Thanks for chatting to us and giving us some insight of that. I've heard that Rael Freire's gone off in the Ferrari, so let's head back to the Hackney Global Broadcast Centre. I think she's got full details on that, Shea.
Yeah, she just ran a bit long in turn 9, managed to get the car pointed in the right direction, no harm, no foul, managed to continue round and round. So Rael Freire, who's never raced at Sebring before, but she has tested here. Rael was part of the Gear Racing Lamborghini. That was the art-looking car that ran in 2019. Christina Nielsen and Catherine Legg, two of the other drivers, they were supposed to be driving in the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring in 2020. That race, obviously, was postponed until November. But Rael and Christina and Kat were all at Sebring testing just before COVID really dug its claws in. So she's had a couple of days here running around with almost nobody else out on track. But for Rael, this is going to be a new experience.
Yeah. What we're down to now, 8 minutes to go. The Alpine Elf A480 brought into the pit lane by Mathieu Vaxvière. Vaxvière then with the best time of 150.150. So what's that in terms of lap record pace? Here, look that up. 150.845, 151.0 for Ryo Hirakawa in the best of the Toyotas. Then Philippe Albuquerque. New fastest time for Mathieu Lahaye, another Frenchman going quickly for Ultimate in the number 35, and that is the fastest of the LMP2 Pro-Am cars. Three LMP2s now ahead of the second Toyota, the Mike Conway car, make that four as Robert Kubica for the Prema Orland team. That's another red, white and black car. That's the number 9, he's just going to make the fifth position. Algarve Pro Racing, René Binder going to the pit.
John, the last time we raced here, we didn't have hypercars, so I can't really compare apples to apples, but I can...
What were the P2s doing? They should be slower.
I can look up P2s. I can tell you the P2 qualifying lap record was Matt McMurray in 2019, 149.728.
Wow. And the hypercars now are doing 150.8. That's the new fastest lap. Last time by, just come back out again, 150.845 for Vaxvière. So that tells you how much the cars have been slowed down to accommodate hypercar. It doesn't matter, though, because I don't care if the cars are 2 seconds a lap slower, so long as we're getting good racing. And I don't think it really does matter. The absolute pursuit of faster, more points, more races, I think it's somewhat of a pointless exercise to say this driver has scored more points than anybody else in whatever championship, particularly if the points, as in most championships now, the points scoring systems have changed massively from 15, 20 years ago.
Okay, so the fastest LMP2 time the last time the WEC was here was a 146.923.
Wow.
That was Stefan Riquelme in the qualifying session. Will Stevens was the second quickest time at a 47.232.
And they're doing 51s now?
Correct.
Okay. So that tells you how hamstrung those LMP2 cars are. And what were the P1s doing then?
Chip? P1s were doing 40.
40?
40.124.
So we're 10 seconds off that.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So it is a big change. There's a reason for that. The cars were getting very quick. And the circuits, it's easier to change the cars than to change the circuits. And I absolutely understand that mentality. Cars getting heavier and getting faster. That doesn't bear thinking about with catch fencing and things like that. So, yeah, okay, I'm down with that. Apparently, that's what the young people say. Is that what you say?
No.
You're down with that?
No, not really.
Okay.
Not really, but I'm not young anymore, as Joe Bradley keeps telling me.
Yeah, he's just winding you up when you
say
that. Don't bite, don't bite. 5 minutes to go, Shea. What's happening?
We've got no change as far as the order is concerned for the fastest cars in the GTM lineup goes. That's still Aston Martin leading Porsche, leading Ferrari. But we do have a change in the pro category because the 92 Porsche, still fastest, now ahead of Nick Tandy in the 64 Corvette. He has been in that car for the entirety of this session, 21 laps completed by the 64 machine. So Milner getting the morning, Tandy getting the evening. It's a very interesting split that they've got. And I've got to wonder how Marco Sorensen feels about all this, because he's the third driver in the 64 Corvette, except not this weekend. This weekend, he's alongside Ben Keating in the 33 TF Sport Aston Martin.
I'm not sure of the how wise it is to come in to this, even just an eight-hour race with two drivers in GTE Pro. If it's as hot as we think it's going to be at the weekend, that's going to be grueling. You might find that nobody double stints at the weekend.
I could believe that, particularly given the time that the race starts.
Midday.
Just before 11:50, I think, is the green flag time scheduled, which means that we are going to be racing through the worst heat of the day.
Correct.
Around 3 to 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So double stints at the end of the day, if you've got anything
left.
Yeah.
And if you've got any tyres left as well. Because
that's true.
As you were mentioning, the heat of the tyres. Just a note for those of you around Sebring at the moment, we take over two different frequencies for the regional radio. And I say regional rather than local, because on Friday for the WEC race, 95.3 FM is the new FM frequency for News Talk. We'll be taking over that station from just before the race start and running all the way through to the end for the WEC. And on Saturday, Highlands Best Country, 99.1 WWOJ. That's where we will have IMSA. So 99.1 for IMSA on Saturday, 95.3, a new FM frequency for News Talk from that Highlands Radio organisation. Great to be working with that group again. We'll remind you of that. And of course, on Saturday for IMSA, we are on Sirius XM 207. Sorry, 206
is our normal one.
206, yeah. I've already programmed it into the car, and that's how I've just remembered that in my head. So if you are suitably equipped, but of course it's always all online with no blocks or breaks on RS2 IMSA Radio for Saturday and RS1, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels, on Friday afternoon. Remember, our big races, Thursday for the Allen J120, Friday for the WEC first round of 2022, and then the headline race culminating in the big action of the 70th running of the Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Advance Auto Parts, all live across the Radio Show Limited network of channels, and with a fair bit of sound and vision on that as well. I know you'll be watching that outside of the US. Lee Diffie with NBC coverage, not on his own, of course, on Saturday. Down to the last minute or so, Shay. How's things looking?
There was just a race that broke out on track. Ben Keating going around Claudio Schivoni took advantage of the Ferrari under braking, and Ben took his Aston Martin up the inside, followed through a prototype. Brilliant move, and now Keating leads, but of course it matters not. Track position at this stage, just under 30 seconds to go in this practice session, and we will be watching the tracker to make sure that everybody takes the checkered flag only once.
Paul de Resta goes to second overall for United Autosports, who are now second and third with Paul de Resta and Phil Hansen.
Wow.
23 and 22, 151 flat, so just on 2/10 away from the fastest hypercar time. There goes the checkered flag.
And there goes the 7 Toyota off the road at turn 9.
Oh, again.
Again. The left rear looks like it was cambered in a bit too much.
Yeah, I agree with that. Is that still Mike Conway behind the wheel of that car? Yes, it is.
It should be, yes.
Well.
All right, first car to see the checkered flag was the Glickenhaus, just ahead of the 28 Jota LMP2, then the 44 ARC Bratislava, that's bright yellow one, 77 Dempsey Proton. And cars being called to scrutineering this time around, we've got the 5, that is the Penske machine, the 9, that is the Prema Orléans team, that finished 4th in class, 22 United Autosport, 2nd quickest time, 31 is WRT, they set the 5th quickest time, and the 38, that is the other Jota machine, that was 6th quickest time.
Hello to Moni, hello Monica, Moni Elysium. Enjoying the coverage. Wish I could be there, but not missing the heat and the humidity. Hope you and Billy are well, Moni. And plenty of racing coming this weekend at RSL underscore studio when we're on RS1, at IMSA Radio when we're on RS2. We'll have a quick wrap, but we're going to try and get another interview before we wrap things up.
Conway's straight into the pits, John. There might have been something wrong with that number 7 Toyota. We've got 7 more cars, 6-5, to take the checkered flag. All right, 3 more, and then everybody else should be peeling into the pit lane. I'll keep an eye on the dancing ants. There was an incident between cars 7 and 28. That's what we saw, John,
that
in turn 1.
That was much earlier on, yeah.
That is under review, so that's something that race control will look at tonight.
Stewards shuffling off to their comfy lounge again.
Really should not have lazy boys in their form. It just encourages this kind of behavior.
It's the nice humidor and the wine fridge, which is very impressive.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I forgot about that. Side by side between the two factory Porsches at the exit of turn 7. That got a bit feisty there between Michael Christensen and Richie Leitz.
Coming round to be back in the pit lane on the back straight. I think everybody's completed now. Just waiting for the Alpine Elf number 36, which is the fastest car. Where's that on the track, Shay?
Almost in the pits.
All right. Joe Bradley is at the pit. Mathieu Vaxvier comes into the pit lane now, Joe. So you should be able to see the mainly blue Alpine heading towards you now. Good lad. Let's hear it as it pulls in, Joe. Go to air. And well, that's very quiet. Did he drift in off power? Oh, not sure if we can get Joe right at the end of the pit lane. Talk to me, Goose. No, I think.
Tower is requesting a flyby.
Talk to me, Joe. Rather annoyingly. Can hear him on the talk back, but not on air. So I think we might have to give
everyone in the pit lane can report that now. So nobody having to pay that €500 fine. That's nice for the end of the day.
So let's have a quick look at the rundown then. A GT arm. Aston Martin, Northwest AMR from Dempsey Proton, the 77 version of their car, and Team Project One in third. That's another Porsche, the number 56 car. GT Pro, Porsche GT team, 92. two for two as far as they're concerned in the 2 1-hour FP sessions, free practice sessions from Corvette number 64. Nick Tandy doing the work this afternoon after Tom Milner did it this morning. And third in GTE Pro, Richard Leitz for Porsche number 91. The two EF Corsas well down behind 3-4 of the AM cars. In LMP2 Pro-AM, let me just check. I reckon it's Ultimate who are the fastest there. Ninth in the P2 cast, but leading, that was the number 35, leading in Pro-AM. And we'll break off for Joe Bradley, who I can hear for a moment. No one, just as I say that, his signal breaks down, but we're keeping listening. LMP2 fastest for United Autosports, 23, then 22. Paul de Rester and Phil Hansen doing the job there ahead of Real Team by WRT, Norman Nato, and at the end for that one. And in hypercar, Alpine, the 36 car, just into the pits at the end of that session, ahead of the Toyota number eight, Ryo Hirakawa doing the work this afternoon. And then Mike Conway with a couple of incidents in third. Then the Glickenhaus, which only did 15 laps there, although Oli Pla did get into that car. It was Romain Dumas who did all the work this morning. Joe, can we try again?
Let's hopefully...
I'm
at Alpine, John, and the car is still... They are doing a little bit of pit stop practice. No sign of any drivers other than... who did you see got out of the car?
Vax Vier.
Yeah, he's in a debrief at the moment, and I can't get to him. All I can describe, John, is the teams tend to do this at the end of the session. They don't put the cars away immediately. Some of the teams further down are practicing driver changes on the pit wall. And, of course, it's no good practicing them back in the awning or in the pit garage. The pit wall presents a problem of its own, and it's quite new, remember. The teams in the World Endurance Championship, very few of them have experience of racing here in America. And it's very different to racing in front of a pit garage, like the type of track like at Le Mans or Spa.
Well, you don't have open access to your pit. You don't have a pit. You've got to push the car down to pit out if you want to take it back in to work. And you'll be working in your awning at that point. And you've got the pit wall is a barrier, effectively, here.
Yeah, that's right. And the car's over the pit wall, then behind the pit wall. For instance, I just saw a driver being advised. And I'm sure if this happens in the race, it'll be a penalty. But he was basically getting dressed just on the pit wall, which is not allowed. There's a red line. There's the pit wall, and then you've got all the garage setups, and then a red line before you get kind of the access lane at the back. And the driver was across the red line. And he was kind of advised by the official that, nope, you're not allowed to even put your helmet on there, mate. You've got to be ready before cross the line.
That red line is hot pit. So that would be equivalent to stepping outside of the garage in a European pit.
That's
what that red line is. That's what delineates the hot pit, not the wall itself, as far as the FIA WEC is concerned.
That's correct. So you know what? That driver wouldn't have dreamt of stepping out of the pit garage
beyond
the red line to put his helmet on. It would have all been done in the garage. And this is what I mean about it's slightly different in the teams using this end of session with the cars on the pit apron to practice their driver changes and their pit stop practice of changing wheels on the pit apron where it's a bit more cramped.
Free practice 3 to come tomorrow. For the moment, it's Alpine that holds sway in hypercar. United Autosports sit 1 and 2 in this second free practice session in the LMP2 category, with the hypercars spread through the LMP2 field. Best of the Pro-AM cars is Ultimate, the number 35, Orica Gibson. GTE Pro, Porsche first and third, with Corvette, the lemon curd in between the Porsche bread, if you will. And the GTE leader is the Paul Dallalana Aston Martin Racing, the Northwest AMR 98 from Dempsey and Team Project One Porsches. That's the Wednesday action for you here on RS1 for the FIA World Endurance Championship with our season-long partners Valkyrie AI, data-driven solutions for a data-driven sport, along with Porsche North America, giving us full coverage of these sessions in Sebring this weekend And our pit lane report, Stuart Bradley in that session, fueled by Sacred Coffee, hashtag Coffee of Motorsport. Shea Adam was with me, John Hindhoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. We'll do it all again for FP3 tomorrow. Thanks to Tim Gray up in London for getting us out to the world, and our responsible adult, Eve Hewitt, was, well, quite frankly, everywhere. Have a good evening or afternoon, wherever you are. Enjoy what you've got planned, and we'll see you back here tomorrow at Sebring for more exclusive coverage. Make sure you check out the schedule, www.radio-show.co.uk. All the live session times on there. They auto-convert to your time zone. Bye for now.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at radiolemans.com.